Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnicke, and on each episode of this show, we look at one of the classics. And joining me to look at such a classic this week, it's Kirsty Wiebeck and Sammy Shah. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Sammy.
Hey, Kirsty.
Thank you so much for joining me. I often feel like I go into a meditative state to get that little spiel out. Mm-hmm. So it's, I always wonder, do I look at the guests while I'm saying that or do I look away? And that felt, both of them felt weird. So anyway, great to be back.
No, but I do like the fact that this is a relaxed podcast. This is the, like your intro to this is a warm cup of tea. It's not the, because most podcasts that you do or as a guest, or a guest on, it's like, hey, 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 what's going on? And yeah. You're like, dude, calm down. Like, I'm already having anxiety.
Yeah. That's right. There's always I feel like there's always a, and welcome to the show, one person clapping.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas on Book Cheat, I'm in a deep meditative state immediately.
Fantastic.
I don't know how good it is for banter, but I feel loosey-goosey.
That's great. Just sit back. Yeah. Enjoy the ride, everyone.
I want a verbal massage from Dave. That's what I'm here for.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. I'd like a physical one, if you wouldn't mind, Dave.
Yeah, actually, yeah, now that he mentioned it.
Well, we're here to talk about a book. Have either you been reading any books lately? Often asked any guests. Feel no pressure to say you have.
I've just finished George Saunders, A Pond in the Rain, in the River, in the something like that. Hang on, let me just get the name out for you. So you know George Saunders? He wrote Lincoln in the Bardo.
Oh, which yes, won, okay. Yes, the one with the man Booker.
Yes, that's right. And so he's got this really beautiful book, and it is called A Swim in the Pond in the Rain. And
that sounds like a relaxing title.
And it is. So what he does is, because he also teaches, I think at Oberlin College in America, he teaches and has for decades now creative writing. And he does a creative writing course where the students get together and over 6 weeks, they analyze four Russian short stories, like from the highlights of Russian literature. And one by Gogol, one by Dostoevsky and like that. And he then, so in this book, he reprints the short stories, teaches you how to read them, how to analyze them, how to break them down. And in doing so, teaches you how to appreciate writing, how to write yourself, and how to just learn the art and craft of reading.
Great. You know,
beyond just like reading a book, like really appreciative reading.
I mean, I think I need
this. It was a meditative experience. It was such a good book. Yeah.
Great.
Cannot recommend it enough.
And now you feel like you're going to have more appreciation for stuff you're going to read.
Yeah. I think honestly, it was one of those things I found it useful because I'd stopped writing as much. And so it kind of got the writing spark back for me. But also just in terms of, as you know, as a tool of like, oh, I never thought about reading in that exploratory way, that way he kind of makes you think about it. It's beautiful. I cannot recommend it enough.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Can I see anything on the reading pile?
Well, I was a few chapters into this book. I think it's actually called Villanelle, and it's the book that Killing Eve is based on.
Great.
So I was a few chapters in, I was loving it sick, and then my puppy ate it. So
dog ate your homework?
Yeah, like quite literally, I was furious. I was really
several
into it
pages?
As well.
Like just one or two or like a lot?
Oh, it's completely trash.
Oh.
Like in the bin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like went to town on it.
The dog put it in the bin, that's very well trained.
Yeah. Recycling bin, she knows how to sort. And so I have just picked up, I've only read like literally a couple of pages, but I've just picked up Vernon God Little,
oh,
which
yeah.
I'm pretty sure we were forced basically at gunpoint to read in year nine.
Oh, were you? Because I remember it, like, it won a lot of awards and stuff internationally when it came out. I was in Pakistan when it came out, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty certain that it was a school text, and basically every school text, just by virtue of them being a school text, it's hated them.
Right.
Yes. And most of them I've revisited as an adult, and I'm like, that's actually really solid. Yeah. It's just that I did not want to be told by Mrs. Parker to read it. Yeah.
It turns out Mrs. Parker knew what they were talking about.
She absolutely knew what she was talking about. So that's what I'm hoping to sink my teeth into. Hopefully before my dog does.
Well, so I like the fact you call your dog a puppy still, even though it's, what, 2 years old at this point?
Oh, she's more like 14 months old.
Okay, all right, okay.
But she looks like a puppy.
She does.
So I have taken to lying at the dog park because my dog is so energetic and wild off lead. He's about to turn 3. And people go, oh, just a puppy? And I'm always like, yeah.
Yeah, newborn. Yeah, yeah.
Newborn, 4 months. Yeah, they're like, oh, he's going to get big. Yeah, yeah, he's going to get really big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so funny because his behaviour is such a shame job.
It is. Funny. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm sure. And they say, yeah, he'll calm down. I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they say, they're a puppy until they're about 2. And I'm like, he's 3? Yeah. It's embarrassing. Anyway.
I've
lied to a lot of people. Now, I've been reading lately, can you believe this? Mm-hmm. And the book that I have been reading, I hold up like I'm David Letterman or something, I'll show you. It's The Sailor Who Fell from Grace with the Sea. That's what we're talking about this week.
It's not dissimilar to the book title that Sammy just...
Yeah, I know. Yes. A Walk in the Pond in the Rain, in the Dusk, in the Dust.
It's like this book that Dave's talking about has just paraphrased your book.
Yes, totally. This one, is so people suggest I what to cover on the show, and this one's been suggested by Riz Arzaf, who listed their location as London/Jakarta, so I love that.
Cool.
Dual lifestyle, Riz.
Man
yes.
of mystery.
And also Georgia Cobb from the UK. Not sure where.
Only Georgia is only in the UK.
Yeah.
That's a bit embarrassing.
No holiday home.
Two locations. Yeah, yeah. It needs to be like UK and, you know, Peloponnesian Islands or something. Yeah. Something cool.
Try and make it sound exotic.
Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with this book at all?
No, not at all.
No, I love the cover though.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know this isn't a visual
medium.
You're
literally judging a book by its cover.
I am. I do all the time.
But it's an absolute beauty, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is a beauty. You're going to have to Google it, listeners. I'm sorry that it's not visual, but it is a stunning book cover.
I'll chuck it on the Instagram for everyone to,
there we
to
go.
Fawn over.
It looks like a Japanese lithograph. Print,
yeah,
and it's this novel is set in Japan, so
there we go.
It's all coming together.
Well, they've given us a little clue.
So a good couple will do that, I hear. Yeah.
They are wont to do.
Yeah.
Now, let me give you the background to the book before we get into it. The Sailor Who Fell from Grace with the Sea is a 1963 novel by Japanese writer Yukio Mishima. Mm-hmm. Britannica describes him as a prolific writer who was regarded by many critics as the most important Japanese novelist of the 20th century.
Oh, wow.
So pretty big rap there from the old mates of Britannica.
Is Yukio Mishima... No, that was someone else. There was a Japanese novelist who then started a cult.
That is Mishima.
It is Mishima.
Yeah. Is
I do know about Mishima.
He has a very interesting background, this
guy. Yes, that's right. There was a whole martial element to his philosophy. And he's very angry at the demilitarization of Japan. And he started a cult. And then I think they all committed suicide.
This is
with
ultra
nerve gas.
Stuff?
That's right. I know.
This
on.
Is the same Mishima that wrote this book.
Same guy.
Yeah.
So this beautiful, this calm novel. Well, this cover that they've got.
Belies a certain turmoil.
So he was an extremely successful novelist, but also quite controversial for his views.
Also, you are quoting Britannica, which no one has done since Wikipedia was first created.
Hey, I trust
you're the
people.
You're the only person left reading Britannica.
I love it. I'm on there. And then it's sad because sometimes you get to an article and they say, you have to subscribe and pay to read this. And I'm like, come on, guys. No one's doing that.
That's absolutely not a thing for you, Britannica.
He achieved success in his early 20s with the publication of his second novel, Confessions of a Mask. Mishima became increasingly right-wing over his life and rallied against the westernization of post-war Japan.
Mm. Like the Andrew Bolt of Japan, basically.
Yes, who also wrote very lovely literature.
Also wrote good books, but Bolt hasn't, yes.
Imagine.
We don't know.
If Bolt was writing beautiful books.
We don't know. Maybe under a pseudonym. He's like, he is the new Mills and Boone's head writer. We have no idea what lives people lead.
I can see him writing Mills and Boone, but lovely poetry, I don't know.
Yeah.
But so he got increasingly famous for his views, but he continued to write prolifically, novels, plays, short stories, everything. And then he formed a controversial private militia known as the Tate No Kai or Shield Society.
I love that they specified that it was a controversial private militia.
As opposed to the
other ones that are just everyday run of the mill, totally above board private militia. Like the one I've got.
Yeah.
You're private army.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Which everyone's okay with because we trust it.
They do good stuff.
Always raising money for charity.
Mostly protecting dogs and dog parks. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
I've lied to many of your colleagues about the behavior of my dog.
Can you please stop lying to my private militia?
Is that a crime? He led 80 students with the aim of preserving the Japanese culture and helping to protect the emperor in case of an uprising by the left or a communist attack. And it all came to a head in 1970. And now I'm going to quote from the BBC, which is a much...
The Britannica of news, some would say.
Is that what the B stands for?
Yeah.
Britannica.
It's so Britannica.
Britannica. Cool. This is what they write about him. He was Japan's most famous living novelist when on the 25th of November 1970, he went to an army base in Tokyo, kidnapped the commander, had him assemble the garrison, then tried to start a coup. He railed against the US-backed state and constitution, berated the soldiers for their submissiveness, and challenged them to return the emperor to his pre-war position as a living god and national leader. The audience, at first politely quiet or just stunned into silence, soon drowned him out with jeers. Mishima stepped back inside and said, "I don't think they heard me." Then he knelt down and killed himself by seppuku, the samurai's ritual suicide. Were they?
I was going to say, up on that moment, it sounded like every stand-up comedy gig where like the crowd boos you. You're like, I don't think they got the material.
They didn't get it.
I'll kill myself now.
Yeah. And he was the first person to commit seppuku since the end of World War II.
Wow.
Can I also, just interject to make it very clear that my private militia would never behave that way.
I'm glad you're on the record.
That's why it's one of the trusted ones. Yeah. 5-star rating.
At the time of his death, he had just completed the fourth, final, and final book in his Sea of Fertility tetralogy. There you go. So he led an interesting life, to say the least. Very controversial. But today we're here to talk about one of his most enduring works, The Sailor Who Fell from Grace with the Sea, first published in 63 and translated into English 2 years later in 1965.
So this is before he went cult leader.
Yeah, that's right. So he's known for his views at this time, but... Yeah. He's not...
People are like, oh, there's Mishima ranting again about right-wing stuff. And then,
but his stuff's selling well. You know, it's very popular. So it's called The Sailor Who Fell from Grace with the Sea. That's the English translation. But a few sources, the Japanese title translates literally as Tugging in the Afternoon.
Well, right, we've all been there.
That sounds more like a right-wing Japanese cult leader.
For some reason. Andrew Bolts, Mills and Boone.
In a weird coincidence, recently I was on Do Go On and Matt and I really went down a tugging wormhole.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what it is about your presence on our podcast.
I'm just like the chief tugger of Do Go On and the spin-off podcast.
Now, that's a business card.
Chief tugger.
We'll get you on the books.
Please do.
So I just thought that was such... I can understand why they went with a different title from Tugging in the Afternoon.
There must be some marketing meeting in the American publisher's office. Yeah, we're not doing that.
It's oddly specific as well. It's like it definitely does not happen before noon.
No.
Whoa.
Look, we've all done gigs where you're in a hotel all day. And afternoon is usually when the boredom really
ends. It's afternoon somewhere.
Yeah, it's afternoon somewhere. Does anyone want to go for a walk? No? All right.
Okay. Bit of me time.
Weird distraction. You and I have the same phone case.
Oh, there we go. That is
random, but I know. Just a weird synchronicity.
I'm feeling that Sammy didn't want to talk anymore about the tugging material.
Okay, sorry, I got very easily distracted. I should get tested for ADHD at some point.
Well, I had a good 45 minutes left in
the tugging material.
I was warming up. Yeah, I was like, right.
We'll just sprinkle throughout a few tugging references. My version is translated from Japanese by John Nathan and part one.
I don't like his work.
You don't?
I have no idea.
You got no time for the work of Nathan?
Yeah.
Part one is called Summer.
Okay.
And I always start with the opening few lines to give the feel of Mishima. Here we go. "Sleep well, dear. Noboru's mother closed his door and locked it. What would she do if there was a fire? Let him out first thing. She had promised herself that. But what if the wooden door warped in the heat or paint clogged the keyhole? The window? There was a gravel path below. Besides, the second floor of this gangling house was hopelessly high. And we're off.
Wow.
Cool.
I'm mesmerized.
Mesmerized. So yeah. Nuburu, he's locked in for some reason. And we've met two of our main characters there. There's Nuburu. He's a 13-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother, Fusako. They live on top of a hill in Yokohama in Japan.
In a gangly house.
In a gangly house with a wooden door.
Yeah. All the houses were wooden. Yeah. So, weren't they? Yeah.
And a gravel path. We've got to mention the gravel path for some reason.
Yeah. Huge shout out to the gravel path for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking gravel path below. Yeah, you could jump out of a window onto a gravel path. That's not the worst thing you can jump out on.
You need tweezers.
Yeah.
Well, assuming you're not wearing clothes that could endure the gravel path.
Yeah.
I'm thinking stones in the knee.
Yeah, exactly. Ow. Yeah. No, that hurts.
It hurts getting them out.
That's a time to regret sleeping naked.
Yeah.
The only time to regret sleeping naked.
When you're not tugging in the afternoon. Yeah, exactly.
Whereas I'd be fine because I sleep in a full Kevlar suit from head to toe.
Knee Gravel's, pads and everything.
Gravel's not getting anywhere near me. But that's just me.
Is that why?
Yes, just in
because,
case.
Because you fear gravel.
Gravel. Even though I live on the ground floor.
Off a non-gangly apartment. Yeah,
nowhere near the gravel.
Some would say.
In a gravel-free suburb.
Gravel-free, that's right. We learn that Nuburu is being locked in his room at night after being caught sneaking out to meet someone mysteriously named the Chief.
Oh.
Okay. Bit intriguing.
Okay.
This is his reality and he's
How old is Nuburu?
He's 13 years old.
That's right.
So basically he's been caught sneaking out. Now his mum's like, I've got to lock you in at night because I don't trust you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're meeting the Chief.
The Chief. But then the novel quickly moves on. You're left going, the Chief, what's this?
Oh, wait, they never tell us who the Chief is?
Well, not yet.
Okay, not yet.
Not yet. A bit of intrigue.
Okay.
Oh.
It's a great work of Mishima, of course.
Yeah,
yeah. Bit of breadcrumbing. Yes. Tell me more, Mishima.
But the kid's not happy about it. He's not happy.
Yeah.
One day in a rage, he started trashing and pulling apart his room in frustration after being locked in. And lo and behold, he found something at the back of his chest of drawers, a tiny peephole that can see into his mother's bedroom next door.
Oh, that's not good.
Uh-oh.
No. Nothing good comes from a 13-year-old weird kid.
Spying on his mom.
All right.
So enemy soldiers occupied his house during World War II, so he reasons that they may have created the peephole that he now uses to spy on his mother.
Yeah.
Okay. So the soldiers are spying, and now he's like, oh, what's this? So he can see into her whole room and where she sleeps alone because his father has passed. And he sees a side of his mother that is new to him, mostly naked, but also quiet and clearly reflective. She just, at the end of the day, sits on the bed naked, just, you know, casually hanging out.
As a parent, just I'm going to say that's not abnormal.
just going.
Sometimes you put your kid to bed, you go lie down naked and on your own bed. You just go, I just need to breathe.
That's what she does.
Yeah.
Just hanging out.
Fair enough.
And he watches
don't
her.
Don't judge.
Like okay, I'm not judging her, but I'm judging this little
him,
creepy
judge
boy.
Him. Judge the kid out of him.
Because I just feel that your instinct would be that if you looked in the peephole,
so your
mum was hanging around naked in the bedroom, that your instinct would be to absolutely cover the shit out of that peephole forever.
Oh, I know.
Oh.
Yeah.
But you'd be like, and then you'd probably scoop your eyeballs out.
Fair enough. Absolutely. At the very least. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, to make sure it never happened ever again.
You're diving straight for the gravel outside. Bearing your face. But he watches it, but he only watches if they argue before bed. If they're pleasant to each other, he just quietly goes to sleep, but he watches her after they have a fight.
So as an act of rebellion,
I think it's an act of rebellion, revenge, yeah. He's I'll watch her like a little purr.
Nothing that's, good comes from this.
No, that's already. Like eating poison and hoping your enemy dies.
Absolutely. This will show her.
Yeah, I'm going to scar myself for life.
Yeah? You want a not well-adjusted son? Well, here I am. But they fight pretty often, so he's spying often late into the night.
Yeah, he's working the Oedipal complex up real good.
Really.
Yeah. He's copping an eyeful on the reg.
Absolutely. The book describes Nuburu. It says, at 13, Nuburu was convinced of his own genius. Each of the others in his gang felt the same way.
They were about their own genius or about his genius?
I think their own genius. No,
okay.
He's lowly in the gang.
Okay, yeah. I'm just wondering.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, everyone thinks I'm pretty good.
I was like that until probably my late 30s. So, yeah. You do come down hard, but it takes a while sometimes.
I'm just coming into it now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I'm incredible.
That's what you're peaking. Yeah. You're peaking.
What's this hole in the wall?
And you're thinking, all right, what kind of genius thoughts is this kid having? Ooh. This is one of his thoughts we learn. If I were an amoeba, he thought, I could defeat ugliness. A man isn't tiny or giant enough to defeat anything. Which you're like, that sounds kind of deep. And then you think about it more.
Yeah,
like,
no, I'm not sure. I feel like I missed a whole bunch of sentences between the first and second part.
Yeah.
Yeah. I too remember showing off my vocabulary. Yeah.
If I were an amoeba. Yeah.
All the friends are like, this guy's a genius.
We get it. You know about amoeba.
Yeah, okay. It's all you talk about. Some of his thoughts are pretty dark, though. One is, death takes root at the moment of birth, and teachers and fathers are all guilty of grievous sins. Therefore, his father's death when he was 8 must have been a happy incident, something to be proud of. Because he's like, people are born to sin. My dad died early. That must have been a good thing.
He's really good at like making one point and then making a completely disconnected point and then just jamming them together and going, I'm like, a genius.
I'm an amoeba.
Yeah. Isn't that Catholicism, basically, what he just described, by the way?
Yeah.
Right?
With sin and the like, yeah.
So the good part comes from the fact his father could no longer sin because
I think so. Yeah, that's all teachers and all fathers guilty of grievous sins. So now his father's no longer sinning.
Why teachers get thrown under the bus here? Teachers really get hard.
Yeah, they really get blamed
from every part of society.
And I had some absolute shitheads when I was growing up. See? I also had
right-wing
some
right-wing cult leader, Kirsty Weebeck.
Well, I myself was also a teacher for a time, and I was an awful... No, I'm just kidding. I was a delightful one. I was genuinely a teacher. But I wasn't an awful one. I did my best.
What grade did you teach? Which class?
Well, I started out as an English teacher, like as an ESL teacher. And so then I mostly taught kindergarten, but I also taught like year 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up doing like a local qualification at some point. And then I was a senior high school teacher my last couple of years.
Oh, great. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's when I lived over in Taiwan. So, yeah, I taught senior high for a couple of years. And they thought I was a loser.
Why?
Just because they were teenagers that knew everything.
Well, 13-year-olds who all thought they were geniuses, basically.
Probably because I knew I was committing a hell of a lot of sins.
Exactly, as a teacher, they're all doing it. But all in all, we're getting a pretty dark picture of this kid. He's only 13, but he's part of a mysterious gang with a chief of the chief. Mm-hmm. Mm. He's got these dark thoughts and then he's constantly spying on his mum naked. Mm-hmm. Bit of a perv.
Yeah. Not a good start.
Not a good start for this kid. Yeah.
I couldn't possibly fathom where Mishima got these ideas from.
That's right. Is anyone checking the back of this guy's drawers?
I think this is the origin story of the character from the Psycho, the movie as well, by the way. In the end, yeah.
One night in summer, Noboru's mother, Fusako, invites a man over to the house after going out with him for dinner. The man is a sailor named Ryuji. Mm-hmm. And the dinner is to thank him for taking her son Noboru and her on a tour of his commercial ship. That's because Noboru is fascinated by ships and sailors. And this guy gave him a tour, and now to thank him, she's taking him out for dinner. Mm-hmm. And now he's been brought back to the house.
Coffee back at my place.
A little bit of coffee, absolutely. You want to come upstairs?
Yeah.
Bit of an afternoon tug.
Yeah, exactly. All right. You know what I'm talking about.
Coffee and some tugging in the afternoon.
Yeah. And let me just tell you that night, Noboru watches his mother and the sailor having their coffee and tugging afternoon.
Uh-oh.
Through the peephole. So he's gone full perv now. He's watched it all. But he does think Ryuji, the sailor, is really cool because he thinks of him as an archetypal rugged sailor.
Noboru's just a mess.
He is absolutely a mess. But when you're a kid, you're like, you've got this
guy banging
of,
my mum is awesome.
Yeah, he is
like,
so
what
cool.
What are you doing, dude?
Love this sailor.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Ryuji stays the night. We get to know him a bit after him reflecting on his life as he lies in Fusaku's bed. We sort of hear the main character's thoughts throughout the novel. He's never really fit in anywhere he's gone. He went to sea as soon as he could because he didn't love the land. But then when he got to sea, he realized he didn't love that either.
Oh, no, the grass is never greener.
Exactly.
Rookie mistake, yeah.
And he never fit in with the other blokey bloke sailors who constantly compare stories of partying and conquest. And he always felt like he was much quieter and he felt he could achieve something greater with his life. And the life of a sailor wasn't really satisfying. But he pushed away all those feelings and lived the life of a sailor anyway, grinding it out. But from time to time, these feelings of longing for greatness creep back into his mind. Mm-hmm. It's like, I've got to do something big. But he's not sure what.
Stand-up comedy. That's usually how this ends. That impulse usually ends with, I'm going to do a 1-hour show.
Yeah. I'm funny. Yeah. I have funny thoughts. Next up, we learn about Fusako, the lady that he's seeing, who runs a successful luxury fashion boutique called Rex.
Ooh,
would I
you,
like it.
Would you shop That's at Rex?
Name. Yeah, I'd definitely go. I'd do some window shopping. And
okay, yeah.
Then I'd take things from there.
I like how even in this hypothetical, you couldn't commit to buying anything.
I'd have a peek in inside and then I'd see what kind of genre of fashion we're talking.
Too many kimonos.
Well, it was started by her late husband. She now sells expensive European-style clothing in point
of back.
From all over the world. Mm. Though she does wear a couple of very lovely silk kimonos, because we learn from this business she's very well off.
Okay.
Okay, I'd go in.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Now she's on board.
Well, let me say, famous people like actors and actresses shop at Rex. So.
Oh, I'd definitely go in.
Absolutely.
All right.
I'd be in there. I'd probably be offered some sort of loyalty card. No.
Oh, please come back. And because of her job and access to sweet clothes, Fusako herself is very well dressed at all times. Her connections are actually how she met the sailor Ryuji. A friend who is, of course, a shipping magnate, I love that anyone with friends who are shipping magnates, organized a tour of one of his ships. When she got there, the captain wasn't there for the tour. He failed to show up. But Ryuji offered to take her and her son, Noboru, the kid obsessed with sailing and ships, for the tour. He's like, all right, I'll take you. And Ryuji stared at Fusako so intently as though he was gazing at a distant object across the sea, and she was attracted to this.
Ooh la la.
Ooh la la, indeed.
So am I, if I could be so bold as to mention it.
If you get on a ship and the sailor isn't blinking and just staring
just
at
staring you. Just staring at you.
Just staring at you. Would that not turn you on?
Staring into your soul.
But looking at you like
massive aphrodisiac.
Like a distant object though. Like I'm thinking like iceberg, like he's looking at you with full terror, like move. We gotta get out of the way.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sexy. Okay, you've definitely perceived it in a different way to me. The way you're discussing it, like definitely less horny.
No, I'm way more turned on now. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You like an element of danger.
Dave staring at me like I'm an iceberg? Fuck yeah.
That's right. Well, all the good stuff happens in Titanic after
that's
the
That's right. Moment. That is very true.
And then how about this for a sexy scene? She then drops her parasol. And he slowly picked it up and gave it to her. Bit of a slow-mo scene, I'm imagining.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, ooh.
That's hot.
Is this your parasol? He's like, yes, clearly. I just dropped it.
Yeah.
That's how I lured Elle under my spell. Was I just flung a parasol out in front of her one day?
You didn't drop it, just threw it at her.
She had to jump into the bushes to avoid it.
Hey, it worked, all right?
Yeah. Now I've got your attention. Want to go for a drink?
Oh, and can you bring my parasol back?
Yeah, please give me my parasol.
I need that. Getting sunburned. So she invited him to dinner under the pretext of thanking him for giving the tour to her son. But really, she wanted to get to know this guy a bit better. And on the way home, they walked through the park. And this is her now reflecting in the office at her fashion boutique. Mm-hmm. She's thinking back going, actually, that's the most I've spoken to any man in the last 5 years since my husband died.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
She's like, I feel a real connection there. Ryuji reflects on the night a little differently. She thought he was a great listener and doesn't seem to have many thoughts, bit of a strong, silent type. But actually, when he reflects on the night, he scolds himself for not being eloquent and getting out his innermost thoughts. So he remembered her asking, why haven't you ever been married? And he remembered his simple answer, it's not easy to find a woman who's willing to be a sailor's wife. But what he wanted to say was this ridiculously long passage that I couldn't be bothered typing out, so I'm going to read straight from the book. What he wanted to say was, all the other officers have 2 or 3 children by now, and they read letters from home over and over again and look at pictures their kids drawn of houses and the sun and flowers. Those men have thrown opportunity away. There's no hope for them anymore. I've never done much, but I've lived my whole life thinking of myself as the only real man. And if I'm right, when a limpid, lonely horn is going to trumpet through someday, A turgid cloud laced with light will seep down, and the poignant voice of glory will call for me from the distance, and I'll have to jump out of bed and set out alone. That's why I've never married. I've waited and waited, and here I am past 30.
So- Holy shit, mate.
I'm getting stand-up comedian who starts a podcast vibes from this guy.
Thank God you didn't say that.
Thank God you didn't say that. Stick with the original plan. Shut up.
Clearly the original plan got him laid. I don't understand why he thinks he should have done it differently.
Well, if he'd said that, what he wanted to say, if he'd actually said that, like she would have passed out. And there would have been no
he'd
sexy
still
time.
Be talking right now.
There was no coffee after that.
No, she'd be packing up his handkerchief and shoving him out the door. Why has he got a handkerchief? I don't know, but...
Well, you gonna need packing. How long is it?
How long does it take to pack up a handkerchief? And why have I determined that he has one? I don't know.
I like that. It's scene building.
It's a bit of poetic license. So please indulge me.
But he's there going, stupid, stupid. Why didn't I say that? And she's sitting there going, my goodness.
Thank God he didn't say that.
Yes, he's so silent. He's a great listener. I really like that about him. So, you know, just speaks in, you know, simple sentences.
Yeah.
I get this man, but really he's like, I wish I'd said that.
Yeah. Anyway. She's like, finally, a man that doesn't bang on. Meanwhile, he's wishing he banged on.
I just want to bang on.
I want to unleash my inner bang-on-er.
The few things he did manage to tell her that is that he lost his house during the war, and then his sister and father both soon died after. So he went to sea to get away from his shattered life. So that's a bit more background of why he left. And then we know that he doesn't really like the sea, but he doesn't like anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now internally, he's questioning his life at sea. We learn that he's going to see Fusaku once more before heading back out on the next job.
Yeah. This sounds like me every time I go onto a cruise ship. Yeah. Like by day three, questioning my life at sea.
What am I doing here?
Why'd I say yes? There's people everywhere.
I can't remember my life back on land.
Yeah. And if you think about it, how lonely you probably get. Someone goes, how are you doing? And you maybe gave a 17-page answer. Like this guy.
Well, thanks for asking, right. Actually.
Yeah.
I usually turn it into a hostage crisis up at the buffet. Well, now that you've mentioned it, I've actually got a lot on my plate at the moment.
Really, they're hoping for a simple good thanks.
Yeah.
And then for you to get out of the way of the omelette bar.
Get back to tugging in the afternoon.
Exactly. Come on, we've all got places to go. So it's super hot. It's the height of summer, and Ryoji, the next day, he's walking around the park reminiscing about hanging out with Fusaku. It's so hot, he just decides to wet his T-shirt with a fountain, just like he used to do with a hose when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. So he's wandering around and...
In a wet T-shirt,
fully sopping wet he is now. And he actually runs into Noboru, his new love's son. Mm-hmm. Young 13-year-old boy. Noboru is hanging out with some friends, and Ryuji's like, hey guys, and tries to be cool and down with the kids to win over Noboru's approval. But Noboru, the kid, can't stop staring at Ryuji's wet shirt and asks what happened. And he explains that he wet it with the fountain, and Noboru's like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But he's actually worried about running into Ryuji. That's one of the reasons he's acting weird, is because he wasn't supposed to be at the park. He's told his mother he's gone swimming, but instead... Before the park, he went to an abandoned shed to have a meeting with his friends, one of whom is the chief.
Sounds suspiciously like he might be drumming up a private militia.
Yes. Hide your government officials. The other boys are only referred to as number one, number two. Noboru is number three. And the final kid is number four.
I do that as well. I'm horrible with names.
I actually think it's a great idea. If we could do that at gigs where, you know, when you're about to, I can't remember comedians' names. Give it up for number two, everybody. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to give it up. Final act of this bracket, number three. Here we go.
I'm your MC, the chief, of course.
Yeah, that would be so much easier. Yeah.
Right?
And at the end of the night, they just the final act, headliner just goes, give it up for the chief.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It works for everyone.
That's easy.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, it's been mentioned on the podcast, so now that is how gigs go.
Exactly.
So all those open mics with 24 acts on would be very different. What number are we up to? Then you get out there like, well, they technically didn't tell any jokes, so we'll go to number three again.
Yeah, exactly.
The next number.
We're retiring that number. Yeah.
So it turns out the group is a little nihilist club led by the chief who teaches all the other boys about how awful the world is and how, quote, the uselessness of mankind and the insignificance of life.
I had no clubs like this when I was 13, yeah. But we just played Dungeons and Dragons. This sounds way cooler.
You think this is cool?
Listen, Dungeons and Dragons wasn't considered cool.
Most things are cool.
I know. Right? Yeah.
So back at the meeting, Noboru showed off and tried to impress his friends at the meeting by saying, "The sailor came over to my house last night. Did you know this?" And he says, quote, "The sailor is terrific. He's like a fantastic beast that's just come out of the sea, all dripping wet. Last night, I watched him go to bed with my mother."
Good Lord,
he's showing off with this.
Shut up.
Everyone is either thinking or speaking too much in this book.
Yeah.
But the other kids aren't impressed by this.
Yeah, number one and number two are like, this is way too much information.
This is so weird, dude.
You should not be watching your mum making love to a sailor.
Yeah, oh my God.
Or anyone, really. Not really sailor specific, is it?
Yeah, that's true. Actually,
my problem is not with a sailor.
Yeah. I focused on the wrong part here. I
is here a butcher? Get in.
Yeah. All right. Finally, a respectable position.
Yeah. Executive. I need an executive. Yeah.
So the kids aren't impressed, especially the chief, who's teaching the others that heroes don't exist.
How old is the chief? Do we know yet?
It's also 13. They're all 13 years old.
Oh, okay.
But for some, he's just taken charge and has got some pretty out there world views.
Yeah, all right.
He says they need to destroy the world to recreate it. Mm-hmm. That's his thing. He's also, quote, trained the other boys to find sex morally and intellectually worthless by showing them pictures, quote, of intercourse in every conceivable position.
Everyone?
Every.
Just for research purposes, I would like access
to all three images.
Some of the kids are can we go back to the previous page? I'm not convinced yet.
All three images? What's the third one?
Okay, well, the third one, it's just a bird's eye view of the same thing.
You're closer. Number two's a close-up. Number three's a bird's eye view. It's all missionary.
It's all missionary. Yeah. It's all sex. There's only one position.
Yeah. Wait, so hang on. His strategy to turn them off sex was show them porn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not worked since the history of mankind.
No, exactly. Normally, a group of 13-year-old boys, the one kid who's got access to his 1980s dad's porno.
Yeah, is the god.
Showing them, and the kids are like, this is sick.
Yeah.
They're not going, gross.
Yeah. If that worked, Pornhub would be the worst business model ever. Exactly. They're like, no one's watching. Yeah. They're all watching one time, and then they're not coming back.
They're watching it for educational purposes to figure out how disgusting it is, morally wrong, and then never going online. Again.
Oh, they're doing it that way. Oh, that is morally reprehensible.
Yeah.
When I was in Pakistan, the government banned all the porn websites, right? So they decided, they instituted a ban, and basically what they did was they actually said, they told the public, if you can tell us what the porn website URLs are, we can add them to our ban list. So one teenage boy, 13 years old or 14 years old, provided a list to the website, to the government, of several hundred thousand porn websites. And there were news articles of like, what a moral boy this is, because look at how he's helping the government. And I was like, that boy has got like one arm way more muscular than the other. Right. His eyes are glowing red hot coals at this point.
Yeah, he's like, reported his websites because he's like, I need something to make it stop.
He's like, please take this away from
please.
Me.
I can't be trusted with this.
And so I made fun
of
him.
The house in days.
Like how you can ban yourself from gambling.
Please, honestly.
And the government gave him an award for it. Well done on all the porn that you have told us about.
That's right, Pakistan's greatest tugger.
Not just in the afternoon.
So the government are praising him, but is he also like public enemy number one?
Oh yeah.
His high school must have
Yeah, I assassinated him. I personally killed him myself.
Hundreds of thousands.
Wow.
It's a bizarre thing.
Yeah. He's like, I just stumbled across these.
Yeah. I don't know.
These 700,000 websites.
Click one link and then you get a Wikipedia hole. That's
a real rabbit hole.
Suddenly you've got 700,000 tabs. Open.
Yeah, and next thing you know, you're on mum being plowed by sailor.com.
So speaking of which, he's trying to show up. He tried to show up and said, look, I saw my mum with his hero last night. And they're like, dude, that's weird. but there's no heroes anyway. Nibiru's like, but the sea's got, must have meaning because Mopi's obsessed with the sea. Hmm. And the chief says, okay, maybe the sea has meaning. Maybe it's the only thing, but not ships. Ships have no meaning. They're man-made, just
okay.
the sea.
All right, okay.
Anything from man is bad. Cool. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So it's a fucked up little club, that's for sure. It's a little
strange. No, I'm on board with everything so far. I don't know what your problem is. I'm very convinced. Yeah.
Well, let's tell you that things go from bad to worse when they went back to the chief's house after the meeting. Mm-hmm. This is before they run into Reiju at the park, immediately before. His parents aren't around and obviously don't care. And the group go to the garden shed where they capture a stray cat.
Oh, no.
This is where things get very grim. Shit. So I'll speed through the scene because it's horrific.
Yeah.
The chief instructs Nibiru, our main character, to prove himself by killing the cat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Which he does
that
by...
That was going to happen, yeah.
Slams it onto the ground and the cat dies. And if that's not already bad enough, the chief then puts on latex gloves, cuts open the cat with scissors and starts pulling out the inside.
So this is a right group of psychopaths.
Yeah, absolute like group of psychopaths. On. Especially led by the chief. Who's, I think the other kids are more like malleable young minds. Mm. The chief's definitely a psychopath.
Yeah, chief is Satan.
And is, infecting their minds.
It's like Jeffrey Dahmer and his gang of friends.
Exactly. If he'd recruited other young men. During this moment, Nibiru thinks, as he watches the chief cut open the cat, I can do anything now, no matter how awful. Because he's been part of this horrific thing. And then the chief gives him praise for finally becoming a real man. He's like, you proved yourself here today, kid. Oof. So it's suddenly gone very messed up here.
Mm-hmm. Now, just tonally, is Mishima condemning some of this or presenting it to us for us to condemn? Or is the tone like, isn't this great? More people should be like these kids.
I think it's mostly being presented to us to condemn, I believe. But it's also not saying what a bad thing. I think it's still the whole thing's quite poetic in language. Mm-hmm. But
because Mishima's whole thing, I'm going off of like a thing I read years ago
on Britannica because it's a great source.
Yeah, of course, the only source.
Britannica, cool.
All right. And,
but his whole thing was that Japan has become emasculated.
Yes.
Because the army has been, you know, there's no army anymore. America defeated us in the war. Japan was samurai culture. That's all gone now. And we are an effeminate country was his whole thing. And so him here saying this boy with no father who watches his mother all the time through the peephole is struggling with the lack of masculine influence. This sailor is a masculine influence. Killing cats is a masculine thing and where they're becoming men. Is that like, this is what happens when you don't have men in their lives.
Yeah,
and
I can see.
The male energy goes awry is his thesis, I think.
I think I can definitely see that. But then when I'm reading, all I'm thinking is, Jesus, this is fucked up.
I mean, yeah, of course. absolutely. I might be, this is George Saunders' approach, which I'm now applying to.
Good. I think that.
Thematic.
Because. No, I don't want to give away too much.
Okay, all right.
I don't want to give away too much.
Okay.
But let's revisit that.
All right.
See what you think by the end.
Okay.
But I like that a lot.
Me too. Enchanted.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So that's what happened immediately before arriving at the park. Now he's run into Roji in a wet t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And Nibiru is very disappointed. This guy, he had just told his friends about being a heroic sailor, is now standing there sopping wet like a child with this weird fake smile being like, hey, kids.
Yeah.
And he's embarrassing Nibiru. He's like, I just told them that this guy's like a hero. He's a lion.
And now he's flossing.
He's embarrassing me. He's no hero at all, he thinks.
He's damp.
He's a damp.
No one heroic is ever damp. You're right.
Damp. Despite this disappointment, Roji and Nibiru head back to Nibiru's house to wait for his mother because Roji was coming over for a date that night. Nibiru asks Roji not to give away his secret of not going swimming and still desperate for the kid to like him. He's like, no worries, buddy. Your secret's safe with me. Back at the house, Noburu fires question after question about boats and life at sea to Ryuji because that's his obsession. And Ryuji's like, wow, you really know your stuff. You know more than me, he says.
Not good.
But the kid snaps back, I don't like flattery.
Oh.
He's like, oh, okay. He's like, all right, I'm trying to be cool. This is weird, okay. Fusaku comes home and Ryuji and her go out on a date. And they have a good time, but both get quite emotional because Ryuji's leaving the next day and they're developing feelings for each other. They're not sure where this is going. Meanwhile, Noburu cracks it at home when his housekeeper, remember, quite wealthy, gets a phone call from Fusaku saying that she'll be spending the night at, quote, a friend's house.
Oh.
I wonder which friend.
Oh, in inverted commas, a friend.
A friend.
A gentleman caller.
Oh, Fusaka must have run into one of her old friends out on the date and gone back to their house.
Noburu's strictly just platonic gonna have friend. Noburu's going to have to stare at an empty room to the people.
Yeah, honestly, he cracks it.
Oh!
Not because, you know, for being abandoned, but because he won't be able to perv on them through the peephole. He gets disappointed.
Oh, no.
And cracking it in his diary. He writes down a list of what he perceives are Ryuji's crimes.
Oh.
It says, charges against Ryuji.
Charges.
One. I know, charges.
I love that.
13-year-old so boys formal. Are easily the worst thing on earth.
I know, it's so good.
So formal. Yeah, yeah. So charges good. Against.
Charges. One, smiling at me in a cowardly, ingratiating way when I met him noon.
Disgusting.
Disgusting.
Fair enough.
Life. Kill him. Kill him. Kill him.
Number two, wearing a dripping wet shirt and explaining that he had taken a shower in the fountain at the path, just like an old bum. Mm.
Kill him. Kill him.
Yeah.
Three, deciding arbitrarily to spend the night out with mother, thereby placing me in an awfully isolated situation.
Oh, kill him, kill him, kill him.
Actually, he decides to cross out the third charge as he feels it's a bit subjective.
That one was a bit much.
That's a bit much. Yeah. You know, it's like when the prosecutor goes forward with, all right, we'll drop that charge, but these two will definitely get you with these.
Yeah. Well, good on him for having the self-awareness to dial things back a bit.
Wet T-shirt, that's killing you.
That's unforgivable stuff.
Yeah.
Fraternizing with a fountain, revolting.
The next day, Fusaku and Noburu go down to the docks to say goodbye to Ryuji, who boards his ship, and they watch him disappear into the distance. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of part one.
Okay. Oh, dun dun.
Part two, our final part, is called Winter. Remember the start was summer?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Now in winter.
Yeah. They're both seasons. I see what they've done.
Oh, okay. Bit of a theme here.
Yeah.
Let's put that in our essays.
Yeah. Bit of light and shade. Yeah. Well, this has given me a whole extra chapter to write about later on.
So part two is winter. Ryuji returns after 6 months away at sea on December 30. And Fusaku and her chauffeur are waiting for him as he disembarks the ship. They immediately kiss and it feels like no time has passed at all. Mm-hmm. She was a bit worried it might be a bit awkward, but no, they're straight back into it.
Nice.
I'm
happy for them.
Yeah, they're having a good time. They like each other.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Obviously, she doesn't know that he's got these weird thoughts going through his mind, but as long as she never hears them, it's fine.
Yeah, hopefully she never finds out. Yeah.
He's shutting up so far, so everything's going swimmingly.
Yeah.
In the meantime, as well as writing each other letters, Fusaku has played tennis and won a trophy. That's what she did with her spare time. She won a tennis trophy. Wow. Got on her.
I just want to say, she's fucking crushing it.
She's cool.
We're not giving her enough credit here.
No, she's running this great business.
Yeah, she's a successful businesswoman, very rich and wealthy as a result of her hard work, dealing with the creepy perverted 13-year-old son, and also tennis champion, and also just hooking up, enjoying her best
living
life.
Living her life.
Yeah. I'd be lying if I said that I wasn't interested.
Should I pass on your contact details?
If you'd be so kind, I might just fling a parasol out in front of her.
Oh, yeah. She's like, oh, but that's my move.
I know. Very good.
You end up just throwing them at the same time.
Parasol's going.
Just swapping. Oh, you seem to have traded parasols.
I know to not be too verbose in her presence as well.
Yeah, that's right. Just shut up.
Be zipping my lip.
Play simple. You'd be right.
No, you do the talking game. Yeah, no.
Then she sees you get on stage. She's like, wow, Cassie's got a lot more thoughts than I thought. Wow. So she's won a trophy. And meanwhile, Ryuji, he's started talking more to his sailing colleagues. So he's opened up for the first time. He started talking about his on-land romance. Usually he's like, I don't want to talk about it myself. But you know, they've all had personal growth, a tennis player and emotionally. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes upstairs to see Noboru when he gets to the house and gives him a gift of a taxidermied baby crocodile that he got in Brazil, which sounds like a border security nightmare. Yeah.
Imagine can you imagine walking into Australia with that?
Yeah, he wouldn't be getting that through Sydney Airport.
No, you have anything to declare? Not. Actually.
Yeah. Yeah, border security just starts chanting, kill him, kill
him. And the next charge against him is a ridiculous gift.
Noboru is suspicious of it and he calls the president a phony and ask Ryuji when he's next going back to sea. Fusaka's shocked because she's like, "Well, my son's being so rude to my boyfriend. This is He's really
lashing
out. He got
him this lovely taxidermied crocodile. What's the problem?"
But she's a stunning specimen.
But she's also like, "Actually, how long are you going to stay? Any idea? Like, obviously he's rude, but any idea?" And he says he's not sure yet. So we're not sure how they're going long term.
Look, he did, you know, that one sentence he did say on their first date was, "It's hard to have a relationship when you're a sailor."
Yeah, exactly, it's true. He made sense.
Front load this,
even though he was like, "Damn it, I wish I'd said this crazy but four he did paragraph actually give
pertinent
soliloquy."
Yeah.
So Noboru is not happy to see Ryuji back. Later that night, Noboru adds two charges to the list against Ryuji.
Yes.
So we've got a new number three. That comedian bombed. We've got a new number three. Answering when I asked when he would be sailing again, "I'm not sure yet." Charge number three.
Kill him. Kill him. Kill him.
Charge number four. Coming back here again in the first place.
Kill him. Yeah. Kill him. Yeah. Kill him.
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
Wow.
So now there's four charges. Not looking good.
No.
The rap sheet's growing.
He's going to go the way of the cat.
Yeah. This is a huge rap sheet.
Yeah.
These charges, however, don't stop him from thinking about going back into the peephole when he hears his mother and Ryuji, you know, walk into the bedroom. But he wonders if he'll get caught. But anyway, on New Year's Day, Fusaku and Ryuji go to a park. They bloody loves parks. This is the third park they've been to now.
I really like parks.
Yeah.
If there was a book written about me, it'd be like, "She's at the bloody park again." Like two or three times a day, I'll go to the park. But also because I have a dog probably. Yeah. But I used to go to the park without a dog. I kind of got the dog to justify my attendance.
You blend in. Look less creepy at the park.
People call the police less now. Yeah. I've got a dog, so I'm allowed to be here. Allowed to be here.
Make it? No. Yeah. But I am allowed to be here.
Oh, you don't want my dog to get any exercise? Is that what you're saying?
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll call the RSPCA and report you.
Officer.
So they go to the park on New Year's Day to watch the sunrise, first sunrise of the year. Ryuji is starting to accept that he's building a life on land. Start thinking about a bit more serious. He thinks about his goal of achieving something massive that's powered him his whole life, getting a bit of glory. He's like, actually,
tennis.
I want. Yes, I could double with Fusaku. We could really take it. We could get a Wimbledon trophy. We could do this. No, he wonders. I wonder if that's even possible anymore. Maybe I should just settle down. So he's thinking about settling down. So he asks Fusaku to marry him, which she is very surprised by. Honestly, he gets a bit defensive here and says, "I may just be a dumb sailor, but I've never done anything I'm ashamed of."
Oh, yeah.
She's like, okay, fine. Yes, she says yes. But we'll have to talk about three things. Noboru, my son, my fashion shop, and your life at sea. These are the three.
Yeah. A, keep finances separate.
Good idea.
Right. Separate. Yeah, no joint account.
That's good, Sammy.
Right.
Yeah.
Noboru goes to boarding school.
That's why, keep him separate from us. Yeah. Fantastic. Get rid of this kid.
Further away. Yeah. And life at sea, whatever. Who cares?
Go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a job.
But he says, "Don't worry, I won't be sailing for a while."
In fact,
when his ship leaves port a few days later, Ryuji isn't even on it. He decides to stay on land with his new fiance and her cat-killing son. Not that he knows that.
He's a cat murderer, but he's her son.
Popular Japanese pop song.
So relatable. Noboru, meanwhile, goes back to school in January and meets up with his evil little gang for the first time since the school break. And they have
a gang name?
The evil little shits.
Yeah.
I wish they had a name. No, they don't call themselves anything.
Evil little stray cat killing shits, I think is what they called themselves.
Did you have a gang name? Like you and your friends when you were in like 13, 14?
I don't think so. No. I don't think we felt like a gang so much as just
a group of friends.
Yeah, a group.
Oh, okay. I was not in a gang, but I was in a band called Weed Hornet. So that was kind of my little mini gang.
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Named after the whippersnapper in the garage where we practiced.
Yeah, yeah.
People thought we were the biggest stoners, and we were like, nah, it's a whippersnapper. And we were a punk rock band, so of course we were telling it like it is.
Yeah, yeah. What were you telling?
Everyone, fuck you.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. That's good. Yeah. That's a good point.
Cool. You're a badass, Dave. Yeah.
Absolutely badass. Yeah.
What? I could tell you had it written all over your face.
Thank you so much. And if you imagine this face as a 13-year-old, it's even badder.
And awesome. Right?
Oh, yeah, and awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the Noboru of punk rock.
Thank you. So that was, did you have a gang, Sammy? Or like a name for your group?
No, just a group.
Like the Scooby Gang or something.
No, it was called, it was terrible. It was the Syndicate.
That's not terrible.
That's cool.
Because we thought we'd be like, one day we will take over the world and become cool with our cool name.
Cool.
We had a cool
name. Syndicate's a great name.
That's great.
But then the
name of the baddies in the X-Files.
Yeah, but then
is it
very cool?
None of us have anything cool happening. But what we did do, which I'm proud of, is when we all started having kids, we decided we'll call our kids the Cindy Kids, which our kids don't know.
they have no idea
that we were Christian themselves.
Yeah, because you're proud of it, but your children would be ashamed of it.
My 13-year-old would stab me like I was a cat.
Calling your kids the Cindy Kids, though. Like, that's a lot lower key than getting together and killing a straight
cat. Yeah,
so I'm pleased that you went with that.
Thank you. Yeah. Those are the two options on the table.
The only two options were to kill a cat or call your kids
this. Yeah.
Well, I think I might take a leaf out of your book and call my firstborn child Weed Hornet as a tribute.
That's so nice.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
that is beautiful.
That'll take off. That'll be, like, for that year, it'll end up
the number one girl's name, Chloe. The number one boy's name, Weed Hornet. Weed Hornet Warnicky. Kicked it all up.
It just flows nicely.
It flows, thank you.
It's really nice.
WHW.
Yeah, I love it.
Imagine those initials.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
First name, Weed. Okay.
Middle initial, H.
And then the kid has to tell everyone, look, my parents, they seem like stoners, but really it's a whippersnipper. He likes gardening, okay?
Can you stop punching me now?
Yeah, please. So he's going back to school, meeting up with the syndicate, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The Cindy Kids,
they are.
They have one of their secret meetings, and the chief asks Noboru about his hero, the sailor, and Noboru confesses that he's given up his sailing job to live on the land. Mm. And he's also like, I've given up on him being my hero.
Yeah. I have a list. Do you want to see it?
I've crossed him off.
Yeah.
And I've written in his charges. The chief asks Noboru if he wants to, quote, to make that sailor a hero again. But he won't say what that involves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord.
It's gone a bit MAGA here. The boys compare what they did over the break, and the chief confides that his father beat him up, and the others start to complain about their own dads.
I'm not against the father in this case.
Because this kid is definitely off the rails.
Yeah. Although the beatings might be why it happened in the first place.
Yes, I think. And all the boys start complaining about their own dads and how they mistreat them. Mm-hmm. And the chief says, but there are worse things in life than being beaten. And Noboru begins to feel lucky that he doesn't have a father at all. He's like, oh, sounds like I've dodged a bullet because all these kids' dads are awful.
Mm. Yeah.
But he starts to worry with Ryuja around. Maybe he won't stay so dad-free for long.
Mm.
So he's feeling a bit threatened. During the week, Fusaku and Ryuji take Noboru out to the cinema and to his favorite food, a Chinese restaurant. And then they tell him, we're getting married. So it's kind of trying to suck up to him a little bit, taking him out to a nice night out.
Like a compliment sandwich.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think? And Ryuji tells Noboru that he's going to start calling him son.
Oh, that's too soon. That's too
straight
far.
Away.
Way too fast.
No, but you know, also, I don't think the father. Like the stepfather is the one that gets to make that call.
Yeah.
No.
It's more that the child would at one point be like, is it okay if I call you dad?
I was thinking that too, but it's like, no, I'm going to start calling you son. And then they have an awkward handshake across the table.
Oh, that's terrible. I'm going to do that in the supermarket later on. I'm just going to go up to a child like in aisle 4 and be like, from today on, I'm going to call you son and just see what
and
happens.
Put your hand out to the chick.
The awkward handshake.
Just to see what happens. This is a little social experiment. I dare say I'll be sending you both a message saying that went terribly. I'm actually in prison.
Yeah. And you're like, actually, I've got a dog, so I'm allowed to be here. Yeah. Nothing weird.
I'm exercising my dog.
Mishima guy, not good ideas at all.
No. It really didn't work out well for him or anyone else.
Yeah. Or anyone else. Terrible advice.
So Nibiru is not—he's not happy about this. He's like, I didn't want a dad. Mm-hmm. All my five friends—they've got terrible dads. Now I'm going to have a dad. He decides to get back at his mother by watching her through the secret peephole. Something he hasn't done in a while.
That'll show her.
I don't buy that at all. Yeah. I am not convinced by that last statement at all. Yeah.
In case he gets caught, he decides to have a foolproof plan of taking his torch and doing some homework in the drawers. So he can innocently say, I was just doing schoolwork in this, like, my little cubby house.
Okay.
If he gets caught. The other thing is they've stopped locking his door at night because they're like, we trust you now. You're a big kid. Don't have to lock the door. But without, he thinks it's easier to get caught now.
Yeah, of course. They can bust in.
Yeah, they open the door quickly and see, what the hell are you doing? So he's like, all right, I've got this foolproof plan. I'm doing homework. I've got a torch. Unfortunately for him, he falls asleep inside the cabinet with the torch on. That night, Fusaku and Raiju get into bed. Things start getting hot and heavy.
And they see the light coming
they
through.
They turn the lights out to do it. And they see a little light emanating from a hole in the wall. And they're like, what the hell is that?
Uh-oh.
Ryuji, he's confused. But Fusaku, the mother, gets what it is straight away and runs into her son's room, drags the sleeping boy out of the hiding spot and just starts slapping him, saying, you're disgusting. You've humiliated me.
All things are correct, yes.
Yes, yeah,
all correct accusations.
And Fusaku tells her, your new father, Ryuji, will punish you with a beating.
Oh, shit.
And Ryuji comes in and he asks Nibiru calmly if he's been watching them from the beginning. And when Nibiru confirms this, he decides to play good cop, cool dad. He says, when I came into this house, son, your life changed too. Not that it was wrong for me to come, but... First, haven't read that out loud before. Here we go.
Tugging in the afternoon. Yeah.
It wasn't wrong to tug. Nothing wrong with it.
Or be tugged. You know,
nothing wrong with that.
It's a natural part of life.
Yeah. He's when a man loves a woman, they tug.
They tug. In the one position from many angles. Not that it was wrong for me to come, but it did change your life. And it's natural for a boy in junior high to feel curious about changes in his life. But what you did was wrong. There's no question about that. But from now on, I want you to direct that curiosity towards your schoolwork. Do you understand?
No. They're very different energies.
I know. But Nibiru is secretly disgusted by this. He thinks, can this man be saying things like that? This once splendid hero who once shone so brightly?
Dude, you liked him for half a day. Yeah. Calm down. Jesus.
He's going to have to add it to the charges.
Yeah. Honestly, he's like, I would have preferred a beating. And he remembers the chief saying, there are worse things in life than being beaten. And one of them is...
being shown kindness.
Being shown kindness by your weak dad.
Man up, dad.
No, yeah, that's honestly what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Nibiru's a mess.
That's terrible. Oh, yeah. Wow, that's really sad, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, so he's not impressed, but he's thinking, I'm going to make this kid love me by being real nice to him.
Yeah. Gosh, they've got two misaligned agendas.
Yeah,
they
really do. Yeah. Nibiru reports to the chief and the others about Ryuji and now enlists the now 18 charges he's compiled against him.
Oh, boy.
They're growing exponentially.
There's so many.
Yeah. Number one is the wet T-shirt. And then
obviously, it can't get worse from there. Yeah. It cannot get worse.
Yeah, that's rock bottom, isn't it?
The chief does the maths. He equates the charges to 150 points and reasons that Ryuji cannot be saved.
This point system seems arbitrary to me.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just saying. Yeah. I just want to point out.
I think it absolutely
point of contention,
is.
Your Honor.
You see, in the world of the chief, the boys are the only true geniuses trying to make sense of an empty world. And they alone are responsible for deciding what is and isn't permissible. Mm-hmm. They have to act to make Ryuji a hero again. We're still not sure what this means. But we soon find out because the chief orders Nibiru to bring Ryuji to them the next day. And then everyone else is given an item to bring with them. And this full-on list includes a scalpel,
no,
sleeping pills, a rope, tea, cups, a blindfold, a towel, and more knives.
I'm failing to see where this is heading.
Yeah. Tea party?
This is the worst picnic I've ever been to. Yeah.
Not a knife.
No one brought food.
Yeah.
There's tea, sleeping pills, and knives to cut nothing.
Yeah. Can't I just bring a plate of baguettes?
Exactly. Where's the charcuterie board?
Yeah.
None of that.
I'll bring the falafel salad in case anyone's gluten-free.
Imagine if you rocked up to this. You come to the picnic the next day and you've got a falafel salad. They're like, Kirsty, what the hell? Number six, what were you thinking?
Like one kid who just completely, I have misjudged this situation.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. I thought we'd get hungry.
Yeah.
I've got scones and a bag of clinkers. Who's in?
I guess mine's going to be pink. Let's find out. That would be so good. The chief says, the plan is, you're never going to believe this, they'll crush the sleeping pills into the tea, make Ryuji drink it, and then do to him what they did to the cat.
Wow.
Which is almost what you said before, so yeah. Just very messed up.
A lot of foreshadowing though, yeah.
Yeah. The chief asks if anyone is afraid and no one says anything. He then pulls out a book on Japanese law, slams it down, reads the part that states any child under 14 in Japan can't be punished for committing a crime. They're all months away from turning 14, so this is their last chance. Whoa.
You got to get in.
He says, if we don't act now, we'll never be able to obey freedom's supreme command to perform the deed essential to filling the emptiness of the world unless we are prepared to sacrifice our own lives. And you can see that it's absurd for the executioners to sacrifice their own lives. So he's like, if we do it now, we won't go to jail.
Yeah.
That's the plan. And with that, we're into the final chapter.
The chief having that book ready does seem like he's just been waiting for an excuse.
Yep, absolutely. Like, this is waiting to cut something open.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's been marking the calendar every day and his parents like think he's counting down to his birthday, but he's actually counting down to 3 days before, which is murder day.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh. That's not your birthday at all. He's like, I know.
My birthday's too late. What a harrowing little book.
I know. But what will happen in this final chapter to bring it all together?
He's going to rock up in a wet T-shirt and he's going to slip away from them because he's all damp and slippery.
I can't get a hold of him.
He's like a slippery fish.
And he'll finally learn to love the sea because that's where he escapes.
Exactly. Yeah. Just swims away. Butterflies out. Yeah.
It turns out that the whole time he was a merman.
Wow.
Here's what I don't get. So the English title is?
The Sailor Who Fell from Grace with the Sea.
Okay. But the original Japanese translation is Tugging in the Afternoon.
Tugging in the Afternoon.
Now, we've been joking about it, but was tugging actually a reference to wanking?
I think it's probably tugboating.
Yeah.
Because he's a sailor.
Oh, like, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I don't think the literal translation is wanking in the afternoon. Yeah.
No, because what is it a reference to?
They literally translated and then went, hang on, people are going to laugh a lot at this. He already says, and yes, I did come. Kids are already going to be laughing at this. We need to work out.
Yeah.
There must be... Well, my Google searches are about to be skewed for the rest of my life.
Tugging in the afternoon.
Well, I just Googled tugging because I thought, you know, why not spice things up on my search history? But nothing nautical's coming.
Well, I've
Googled. Oh, tow a ship by means of a tugboat.
I'm on litcharts.com, which is one of those sort of school resource websites, and it says, the novel's Japanese title literally means tugging in the afternoon, which is a reference to tugboats. But the Japanese words for glory and tugging are homophones. They sound the same but are written differently.
Oh, so it's like it's a pun on glory.
The Japanese title is a pun about the relationship between glory and sailing.
Glory in the afternoon is also another phrase for ranking. I just want to point
out. Yeah, I'm just going for a glory in the afternoon.
Yeah. All right, so continue. Sorry about that.
It actually even says John Nathan, who's the translator, who was a friend of Mishima, struggled to capture the pun in English even after finishing the whole translation. He still couldn't find an adequate title, so he met with Mishima, who offered him several alternative titles.
Yeah.
In Japanese, and they agreed on the one that translated elegantly to The Sailor Who Fell from Grace with the Sea. There you go.
Right. Yeah, that's nice. I think they made the right call.
Imagine telling your friend, I'm really sorry, but in English, that sounds like having a wank in the afternoon.
If you'd emailed me and said, hey, we're reading a book tomorrow, it's called Tugging in the Afternoon, I'd be like, I don't know if I want to book you anymore.
No, that's right.
I think Dave's on his own with this one.
I think I would have put the classic back on the bookshelf at the shop. Or I would have bought it and just read it quietly to myself.
That's right. You don't need to share that with your friends.
And got to the end of being like, I'm very disappointed. So, final chapter. Bring it all together. Mm-hmm. Ryuji says goodbye to Fusako, saying he's going to the pier to meet an old friend. Really, he's going to meet Noboru and his classmates, but Noboru asked him to keep it a secret. Mm-hmm. He's like, my friends really want to meet you and hear about your sailing stories. Can you meet them? But don't tell mum. And he's like, yeah, kid, I want to have a bond with you. Yeah. That sounds great. So he happily goes along. They ask him to travel with them to a dry dock on the outskirts of town, which is where they fix and build ships, one of those dry docks. And he regales them with stories of his life at the sea. They get on the streetcar and travel to the last stop, and then they walk for ages up a mountain and through fields. And Ryuji's like, this is a funny place for a dry dock away from the ocean. But anyway, let's keep going, kids. Weird, we're too traveling trusting. So far. Okay. Yeah.
How many are there in total? It's three, number one, number two, number three, and the Chiefs. So that's four kids in total, I'm assuming.
And there's also a number four.
Okay, so five kids. All right.
Ooh. You just never suspect, would you, that this little gang of like...
Gang
of youths were plotting to murder you, would you?
I just assume, cut me open.
No.
I do assume any gang of like young boys is murderous. So I just start flailing like wildly at children whenever I see them.
I have seen you crying on High Street once.
Yeah.
Surrounded by children.
Yeah. Right after being stabbed many times, you know.
I'm like, it's 3:30. They've just been let out of school. Chill out, Sammy.
Oh, no.
They're waiting for the school bus. And he was just weeping gently.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
So they get to the top of a hill, which offers a great view of the ocean, but it's also secluded and near no one else. Mm-hmm. Ryuji realizes he hasn't seen the sea in a long time and he starts thinking about a sailor's life and all the places he's
focus,
visited.
Focus, Ryuji. Focus.
Yeah, now's not the time to take a trip down memory lane.
But he's absolutely daydreaming. He's thinking about how much he misses the lifestyle.
Oh, wow.
He starts singing an old sailor's song.
Oh,
and all the boys laugh, except Noboru, who's really embarrassed. He's like, oh, no, let's just kill him already.
Yeah, stop doing sea shanties.
He tells stories of...
Yeah, once with the ship, they're like, stab him!
Yeah. Let's kill him now, stuff the sleeping pills. Whatever, we can take him. It's five of us. Yeah. And he starts showing off with stories of the Suez Canal, of Hong Kong, visiting Egypt. He talks about visiting Newcastle, Australia, which I imagine was one of his highlights.
I went there this year, actually. Very good.
It is beautiful up there.
Up there with lovely Hong Kong, Suez Canal and Egypt?
Yeah, just Newcastle.
Yeah. Beautiful, Nobby's beach, fantastic, beautiful.
Yeah, maybe it is up there with Egypt, actually. Yeah, Sammy.
Yeah. One of the seven wonders of the world, Nobby's beach. Yeah. This is a quote from the book. Halfway through his story, Ryuji happened to glance and saw the leader of the boys slipping on a pair of long latex gloves. Tensing his fingers, the boy crossed them nervously again and again, as if to glue the cold rubber to his flesh. Ryuji ignored him. A bright student, bored with class, was acting on caprice, a meaningless display. Mm. So he's like, that's weird. Won't spend a second thought on that anyway.
They're putting down a rubber mat. Yeah. They're sharpening knives on a whetstone.
Like, anyway.
There's an episode of Dexter playing in the background, but he's like, never mind. Never. Kids will be kids.
The soundtrack starts ramping up to like, wee, wee, wee. Yeah. weird sound. Anyway, the sea, my mistress.
I love it. They're listening to Slipknot.
Yeah.
What's going on? but he's like, well, anyway, with this Ryuji begins to daydream again about the life of a sailor he's turned his back on. Mm-hmm. He sees himself as Noboru once saw him, as a heroic sailor. He used to covet a life of glory, death, and women. Now he has the love of a single woman, but he doesn't have the other two, death or glory.
Oh honey.
I know. Uh-oh.
Oh.
If only you knew, son.
Yeah.
And he feels the call of his grand cause is fading away.
Oh. Glory in the afternoon.
Yes, yeah. That's what he's thinking about. He's
afternoon
thinking about
glory.
And he's wondering, is this trade-off worth? Should I have a wank right now?
I know.
This is a weird place.
Maybe I'll children around.
Yeah, I'll wait till later for that. But I used to have these big aspirations, but maybe I've got to settle for this life on land. Is that going to be enough? But his daydream is broken when the leader of the group says, "Want some tea?"
Oh dear.
Which he accepts without even turning his head. Ryuji then continues to daydream. The final lines of the book are, "Here's your tea," Noboru offered from behind him, thrusting a dark brown plastic cup near Ryuji's cheek. Absently, Ryuji took it. He noticed Noboru's hand trembling slightly, probably from the cold. Still immersed in his dream, he drank down the tepid tea. It tasted bitter. Glory, as anyone knows, is bitter stuff. The end.
Oh.
So we don't know what happened.
We know what happened.
But were there enough sleeping pills? Was he drugged? Did they kill him? Did they go through with it?
I'd like to add this to the rap sheet, but for Mishima, you cannot end a book like that. Wrong.
Okay, sorry, the final line. It was all a dream.
that makes more sense. Yeah, I'm down with that.
I am so angry.
Wow. Yeah.
So.
The cult
stuff was bad,
then,
but this is worse.
Come on. Like, what a cop out.
We don't know. And if you look, it's quite a thin book. It's, 150 pages or so. You could have given us a bit more, mate.
A little more chapter.
That always feels to me like they just got bored. They're like, I've said what I wanted to say.
I don't know how to wrap it all up. Whatever.
Yeah. How am I going to do the scene? Is it going to be gory or understated? Do you know what I'll do? I won't do it at all.
Synonyms for stab.
Yeah. I'll put that in the reader's mind. Yeah. That's your job now. Work it out.
Yeah. Well, I've given you the gift of imagination.
Mate, you could have done that after one page.
Yeah. Yeah, like just set points. All the characters up in dot points and they'd be like, anyway. I'm going to leave it to you.
The world's laziest choose your own adventure.
I'm going to leave it to your discretion to fill in the gaps on this story.
That is interesting.
Well, so to revisit, Sammy, what you're saying before, having heard that, do you think that is Mishima painting the...
I think the whole thing's a metaphor. I think the Noboru is like, the Japanese spirit that has been like unmanned, because that's how he used to think Mishima, right? In his masculine feminine terms. And so he sees it as unmanned. He then sees America as this influence that comes in and basically is, like, hey, I'll be your dad and I'll be wonderful to you.
Yeah, takes away all their autonomy.
And takes away all their autonomy. And the only way for Japan, because it's this the energy has nowhere to go, it goes towards acts of violence. It's not like he is condemning the thing the kids do, but he's also saying that this is what will happen in a world without a father and a masculine presence and with that kind of martial spirit to go on and all those things. I think this is what he's saying. That's my pedestrian summary of the thesis of the themes of this story.
I like that. And Kirstie, any notes on the tugging, any analysis?
Well, it's so funny that you asked me that question, because I was just thinking how good it is that Sammy's here. Because like, if it were up to me to summarize, I'm just like, the ending shit. It's lazy. It's shit. I don't get it. And Sammy's like, well, the whole thing's a metaphor.
Beautifully said.
And, like, Sammy's just absolutely solved all of the world's problems and created world peace. And I'm like, it's shit. What about wanking in the morning? Shit, boo.
Now I regret not making more wanking jokes.
No, we're the yin and yang. That's like, right, we're both necessary.
You played your parts perfectly there. Sure. Yeah.
We're both very necessary.
We end up Boru's mum and dad here.
I'm certain Dave had a reason why he got you and I on the podcast.
Like, you got to get the balance right.
Yeah, you can't have both Bill and Ted on in the one episode. You've got to have Ted and Socrates.
I totally appreciate that. What if I was to tell you, so it's been made into a film in the 70s, 1976, but they changed the location from Yokohama to Devon in England.
I don't know if it would work.
Yeah.
Well, only because so much of this is set in Japanese culture.
It's very cultural, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd ruin the metaphor.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, from this point on, it's purely wanking.
If you're moving it to Devon, it is absolutely pure wanking.
Between it starred Chris Christopherson and Sarah Miles, if anyone's interested. I watched the trailer.
Who's Sarah Miles? Why does it sound familiar?
looked.
How's the trailer look? Is one of those trailers from the 80s? And, where's 80s? You said,
1970s, 1976.
Yeah, which is just like a man alone on a boat.
They're both still alive, Sarah Miles and Chris Christopherson, and she's now 80.
Him I know.
That is genuinely bizarre, though, like making it not Japanese.
Yeah.
It well, is bizarre. I mean, it's such a bizarre.
It, like that's like the whole of Hollywood.
I know, but
they were just Scarlett Johansson did. That's all.
Yes, you know. But in the '70s, was anyone saying anything? No.
Yeah. Was it a flop anyway? The movie.
No, I think it is. Well, it did all right? To the point that if you look it up, the movie comes up before the book.
Oh,
when you're looking it up. She's in multiple movies. Ryan's Daughter is a film where she received an Academy Award nomination for Best Actress.
Okay.
She was married to the very famous playwright Robert Bolt. Mm.
Love Bob Bolt.
Bobby Bolt. And then Chris Christopherson, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
A storied career of hits and
movies. Misses.
Yes, and misses.
Yeah.
But he's also still alive, I believe, at the age of 86.
Cool.
Great work. So any other final thoughts?
Did you think of it?
I must say, it's very written in a very philosophical way. So everything's...
What's the writing style like? Like, is it a pleasure to read or...?
It's I feel like one of those ones where it's very poetic.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you're like, wow, what a phrase. And other times you're like, that could have been said so much more simply. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes it's really impressive and other times you're like, okay. But and it jumps between the three main characters' thoughts quite well and their sort of outlook. And the funny thing is they all have these internal monologues. I feel like none of the three of them really know each other at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Yeah, because it's very deep about what they think and what they say out loud is never...
It is all ships passing in the night.
Yes.
No one knows what the other person's internal...
Or it's just the tip of the iceberg, if you will.
Yeah.
They pass on about 10% of their personality.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is very... The conversation doesn't reflect their deep inner thoughts. And honestly... For Ryuji, that is a great thing.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
He's been at sea for too long. He's written these wild theses in his mind that probably shouldn't be shared.
Yeah, hush those sweet lips.
Yeah. That's enough.
You say it best when you say nothing at all.
Absolutely. Correct. It always comes back to Ronan Keating on this podcast.
Yeah. As it should.
As it absolutely should.
Yes.
It should, yeah. But I did enjoy it. We used to give it a score out of 5, mm-hmm. all three of us. Mm-hmm. Sammy, Kirsty, how are you feeling having heard that story, the idea of that story?
I was quite interested by it.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting.
It's the ending that let you down.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
it's the kind of book where, like, when you reach that last page, you're like, no, there must be another page missing.
Yeah.
Like, this is bullshit.
Years ago, I read The Life of Pi, like, when everyone was reading it. Loved it, thought it was great, but everyone was raving about it, and I just could not get my head around why everyone thought it was so groundbreaking.
I agree with you. Yeah.
And then at the time, I went back because I was like, I've missed something. And like the bit of the story where everything is brought together,
my
pages were stuck together. not for any nefarious reasons, but the pages were stuck together and I'd missed the whole wrapping up of the story.
When he explained it's a metaphor.
It didn't make any sense.
I've got my copy of my book here. I better just double check.
Yeah, let's make sure.
Double
that
check
is
that
the
there's
ending.
No pages stuck
hang on,
together.
Hang on, is there a postscript or anything? No, thank goodness. I would be so funny if I realised, hang on, actually.
That's what's happened.
I start reading about
it. Oh, no, they stabbed the shit. Yeah,
like, no, they did explain scene. It all in graphic detail. That's so funny.
I wasn't too let down by the news because I was a bit worried about what was going to happen because the cat thing was so awful. It's one of the worst things I've ever read, like them killing a cat, cutting it open. I'm like, I don't know if I could handle the graphic description of a man drugged and being cut open. So I was that was a relief for me. In my mind, I can be like, he just walked away and they went, don't worry about it.
I feel like one more line of like, you know, this first knife stabbing him or the boys... Yes. Lunging at him, or something to clarify.
Yes, or like they pulled the scalpel from a sheath, held it to the light, it glinted.
Or even like he'd been daydreaming about his life at sea, and then little did he realize that he was about to spend eternity in Davy Jones's locker.
Oh, great stuff! It's fantastic. That's poetry.
Davy Jones's locker.
that famous Japanese phrase.
I should have written this book.
You are the Mishima of Australian writing. I agree.
I absolutely am.
You've got a Mandalisha already. We know
that. Mandalisha. Yeah.
Where I thought you were going with that, and I was like, oh, this could be good if little did he know when he was daydreaming that he's already been drugged. And that was him going in and out of consciousness as they're cutting the shit out of him.
Dave, you give me way too much credit.
But honestly, David James Lockhart, it does not get better.
Yeah, I agree. Now 5 stars. Before, two.
Okay, so score out of 5. Sammy, how are you feeling, honestly?
Two and a half.
2.5 out of 5. Okay, fantastic. Kirsty?
I'm giving it 3.
Really?
It's losing 2 points because of the charges that I've made against it for having a terrible ending.
A list of charges.
Yeah. One charge that it's losing a point for is the ending, and the other charge is the Stray Cat. Mm. I hate it.
Yes, it was. And I really glossed over it.
For me, the problem is that Stray Cat stuff foreshadows the rest too obviously. And so you're like, all right, I know where this is going.
Yes.
The surprises stop coming. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's my
feel. Yeah, well, it's a tale as old as time, isn't it? Cruelty to animals, cruelty to your new stepdad.
True, exactly.
Drugging him, taking him out to the middle of nowhere and cutting him open, of course.
We've all done
Who
it.
Who hasn't been there?
We've all done it. We've all been reckless 13-year-olds.
It's a real coming-of-age classic, this one. I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5 because, I enjoyed reading it.
Also brevity, it's not too thick.
Exactly, it was brief. It didn't go on and on and on. I feel like maybe in that poetic style, if it had gone on for 500 or 600 pages, it would have been like, all right, put me out of my misery, give me some sleeping pills.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up, mate.
Kill me like the Stray Cat.
Yeah. But there is, so that's a novella-sized book, right?
Absolutely.
Not a novel. And I really don't understand why it's not more common.
Yes.
Like in publishing, why more people don't publish novellas all the time? Because they are perfect.
Absolutely. And I think that he was prolific, and that is how he was prolific.
Yeah.
He published a book at least a year throughout most of his life. And I'm thinking, because he just had an idea, wrote it out in 150 pages.
Didn't give it an ending.
Yeah, exactly. You know? He'd already moved on to the next book.
Yeah, exactly. All right, cool.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Now, you both do lots of great work outside of my podcast.
And I'd love to
point people towards it. Sam, you've got a new podcast on Audible called The Mist.
That's right.
I've just started listening to.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm obsessed with it.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
Yeah, it's M-I-S-S-E-D,
yes.
Mist. I wish the way they pronounce mist was the missed, just because it would cause less confusion.
Yes, I missed. Yeah. Yes, okay.
But that's how it's spelled. And it is, it's a not true crime. It's a fictional crime noir podcast series, 8 episodes, and it's a full cast production.
Radio play style.
Yeah.
Theater of the mind. Fantastically produced. There's even a note there saying that it's better on headphones, and I would definitely suggest that. I've been lying.
We play with binaural audio lots.
Yeah, it's coming in and out. There's voices over here, over there. It's very intriguing already, and I'm only one episode in.
All right, cool. Yeah, I hope you like it. Yeah.
Very big fan of that. So people can check that out on Audible.
On Audible, so audible.com.au/themist, or just go to Audible Originals, and The Mist is one of the ones.
Fantastic. And you've been doing very well on Audible too, up there in the charts.
Yeah, it's been a lot of listeners in the UK, which is interesting because I don't know how Audible markets this stuff, but for some reason we've gotten a lot of fans in the UK, which has been wonderful. Yeah,
fantastic. Check it out. A big high recommend.
Thank you.
Kirsty, what have you got coming up? Lots of gigs. Are you going out to sea at all?
I'm going out to sea on Friday.
Really?
I am. I genuinely am. Having a hoon out there for the weekend.
Why not?
Because I've just been taking a trip down memory lane about all of my times at sea, so it'd be good to get the old...
Would you like to be?
It'd be good to get the old legs wet again. That's not how it works, but you know what I mean. The legs wet? What?
That is a fantastic phrase.
I'm heading out there to wet my legs for a few days.
If you know what I mean? No, I don't.
No, what are you talking about? But yeah, I actually do my best work on your podcast. But other work I do, I'm on all social media at Kirsty Wiebeck. Got a website, kirstywiebeck.com. I'm out there. I'm working on a new show if you're in Australia. Mm. It'll be touring next year.
Doing all the festivals next year.
Doing the festivals. Yeah,
fantastic.
I've got a mailing list on my website. Join it. You won't get spammed. Recently joined TikTok. Could really use a boost there.
Great, fantastic.
Very funny videos. I'm very good at what I do.
Another high recommend.
But thanks for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure as always.
Thank you so much. Great to have you both on. And for everyone out there, really appreciate you listening to the podcast. And as we always say at the end of the podcast, and that is thank you for listening and books forever.
Yay.
Britannica, Britannica, cool.
I hope that catches on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.